We're taking you on the hunt for food supplies in Moscow as the Russian government insists supply shortages are not an issue there. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Global sanctions against Russia for its invasion of Ukraine have already made drastic changes to everyday life in the country. Newspapers have shown empty shelves at supermarkets and some shops are limiting what people can buy. Yesterday, the Kremlin denied rumors basic food staples were in short supply. So the BBC's Steve Rosenberg went on a hunt for one scarce commodity in the capital, Moscow.
In Moscow, I went shopping for sugar. I ask a shop assistant.
No sugar here, he says. Let's try somewhere else.
Supermarket number two. Again, no sugar. And the assistant adds, we've got no buckwheat or semolina either. Worried by rising prices and fearing that Western sanctions will deal a heavy blow to the economy, Russians have been stocking up on essentials. So much so that some items are in very short supply. A lot of the supermarkets here have now limited the sale of essential foodstuffs. In my local shop, it's only one bag of flour and one pack of salt per customer. Russia's Deputy Prime Minister, Victoria Abramchenko, told the Russian people, don't panic buy. We have enough sugar and buckwheat to cover domestic demand. Trouble is, when a government minister says, don't panic, the sceptical Russian public tends to panic, especially at a time of huge uncertainty, with Russians bracing themselves for what they fear will be a deep economic recession.
That's the BBC's Steve Rosenberg reporting from Moscow there. Well, from the impact of sanctions on the Russian economy, now to the impact on one of London's richest, most followed soccer clubs. Chelsea's current owner, Russian oligarch Roman Abramovich, had his assets frozen last week by the UK government as part of a sanctions package over his links to President Vladimir Putin. Now the team is up for sale, and six bids are in so far, two from the United States, as the BBC's Dan Rowan reports.
One is a consortium involving the LA Dodgers co-owner, Todd Boehly. The other a group that includes the Chicago Cubs owners, the Ricketts family. Now, there are other bids who met Friday's deadline. A sale's hoped for by the end of this month, so a shortlist could well be established as soon as today, with Rain identifying their preferred bidder perhaps by the end of the week. Now, Chelsea and Abramovich would need to agree to the choice. Government would have to give the green light and grant a licence for a sale to be allowed, and the winning bid would need to pass the Premier League's owners and directors test. But there are a number of questions to be resolved still. To what extent could Abramovich influence the choice? Will the fans' wishes be taken into account through an actual stake being offered to them in the club? Would rival clubs oppose this writing off of £1.5 billion worth of debt that the club owes Abramovich? And where exactly will the sale proceeds go? Which charity? Ministers have made clear not a penny can go to the Russian oligarch.
That's the BBC's Dan Rowan reporting there. Checking the numbers now, global oil prices have reversed an earlier rally as reports surface that the European Union will agree at a summit this week to jointly buy gas, liquefied natural gas, and hydrogen before next winter. That's as countries look to diversify away from Russia for energy for its Ukraine invasion and to prevent future supply disruptions. Elsewhere, stock markets are mixed. The Pan-European Stock 600 Index is up 0.5% at this hour. Hong Kong's Hang Seng, meanwhile, jumped more than 3%, helped by a sharp rise in Alibaba shares after the company unveiled a new share buyback program. To the popular tourist destination of Thailand now, where the government is trying to revive its COVID-hit hospitality industry. For thousands of visitors, though, the tropical paradise quickly turned into a nightmare 3 weeks ago when Russian forces invaded Ukraine. Now vacation goers from both countries are stranded far from home, as the BBC's Jonathan Head reports from the resort island of Phuket.
A beachside hotel in Phuket serves as an impromptu immigration office to process visa extensions for tourists stranded by the war in Ukraine.
Put your email address here. Email.
We came to Thailand in the beginning of December and we plan to stay here till the middle of March. And now, due to war, we need to like find a special way to extend it.
Number, road.
Anton and his partner Alina were supposed to return to Kiev last week, but there are no more flights, and their families don't want them to come back yet.
We can't be relaxing here every day, watching and read some news. And it's very difficult because we can't work. I can't work without thinking about it. I can't go to the sea and be relaxing.
Well, as you walk down the silent side streets of Coron Beach in Phuket, past the shuttered bars and beachwear stores, you can see just how 2 years of COVID isolation have gutted the economy of this island, once the beating heart of Thailand's famous tourist industry. Now Thailand did begin reopening to foreign tourists 3 months ago, but with their biggest customer base, the Chinese, still unable to travel, it was the Russians and East Europeans, more than anyone, who began coming back to escape the cold northern winter. On the beaches, you hear Russian more than any other language. Several thousand are still in Phuket, but many of them are running out of money as the sanctions block Russian banks and flights back home. Most of them don't want to talk to journalists.
It's basically impossible right now.
This young graphic designer from Moscow, though, did agree to speak if I didn't use his name. He worries about repercussions back home.
We were going from bank to bank, from ATM to ATM all over Phuket. 9 out of 10, it was like a decline. There were some means to get it through maybe cryptocurrency or maybe some other services like Western Union, but it's closing every day. We try to pass a day like a tourist, but it's very stressful and sleeping is difficult.
There are several Russian restaurants near Koron, like the Veranda, which have opened in recent years to take advantage of this beach's popularity with Russian tourists. Today, it's almost empty, and manager D fears it may be a long time before they come back. There were huge numbers of them around New Year, he told me. My restaurant was packed every day, but now they can't withdraw money to pay for their meals. Thai tourism had been hoping this would be the year its fortunes would start looking up again. The war in Ukraine has dashed those hopes, and the economic repercussions of the war may yet do even more damage to an industry which has weathered many crises before, but nothing quite like this.
That's the BBC's Jonathan Head reporting from Phuket there. Our editors today are Matthew Davis and Leisha Santarelli. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.